Baba coming after you in anger over defacing his mother's image. It shows an integral part of your future. And its end. Chapter 4. Nick's throat tightened as he walked to the picture that hung about 3 feet over his head on the wall. He stared at the powder burn marks and hole. While there was a Rorschach-esque quality to it, it didn't look like much. Tilting his head, he squinted and treated it like a Where's Waldo puzzle. That showed the date of his death? Forget meth was death. Death was on meth. It just looked like a big mess to him. He scowled at Grim. You're pulling at me, right?
Maybe. Maybe not. You'll have to play with me for a while to see.
Nick wasn't sure he liked the way Grim phrased that. Why is it when you say things like that, I feel like I'm gambling with my life?
Probably because you are. I never gamble for anything less.
Now that just made him feel all warm and fluffy inside. Oh, goody. Did you say something? Mark stuck his head through the curtain that separated the front of the store from the back room. Yeah, I said, oh, goody, as in I get to clean this mess up. Mark gave an evil laugh. I had that same reaction. I even tried to quit when I showed up this morning, but Bubba wouldn't let me. Told me if I tried to leave, he'd shoot my butt full of buckshot. He's the only SOB I know who's crazy enough to actually do that, so here I am, ticked off, but alive. It's a good day. He vanished behind the curtain to return to whatever he and Bubba were working on. Nick went back to Grim. Don't you have any friends you could hang out with?
I do. But the problem is, when I hang out with my friends, it usually gets ugly for the rest of you. Especially when we're bored. Nothing entertains us more than plagues, famine, war, and bloody massacres.
You play D&D too, huh? Who's your DM? Grim tisked at him.
The difference between my group and yours? Our toys are real.
All of a sudden, the horse ran out of his pocket and up his arm to rest on his shoulder. Neat trick. Creepy, but neat.
So, that's like your pet monkey?
The tiny horse snorted flames and whinnied at him.
Easy, girl.
Grim stroked her mane to calm her down.
You'd do well to show her respect. She can understand you, and she doesn't take well to insults.
Sorry, Flicka, didn't mean to rattle your bridle. Nick started straightening. Grim dogged his steps.
The key to what I have to teach is that the universe and its beings speak to you constantly. But much like the little book you received last night, they seldom speak overtly. You have to figure it out on your own, and hopefully before it's too late. The power of divination is a way for you to listen to the warnings the universe gives.
Nick stiffened as a chill went down his spine. How do you know about my grimoire? Grim snapped his fingers, and the book appeared in his hand. Small and black, with a funky red symbol on the front that was supposed to be Nick's personal emblem, it contained riddles that had helped Nick survive the attacks from the night before. All he had to do was ask it a question and release 3 drops of blood on it, something he still thought was gross, but his blood would circle and move to form words and pictures on the page and give him clues. That being said, the book was a snarky little slug. It didn't like answering questions any more than Nick did, and it answered them with a venom Nick wished he could get away with and not stay grounded for life. Narrowing his eyes on the book, Nick slapped at his back pockets to see if the book in Grim's hand was a duplicate. It wasn't. His pants were empty. Well, wait a minute. They weren't empty, because that would imply something that definitely wasn't the case, but his pockets were. That was definitely his book, and death was tainting it. He glared at Grim for the theft. Normally he'd reclaim it, but snatching something out of death's grasp didn't seem particularly intelligent, unless it was your own life. Oblivious of and impervious to Nick's anger, Grim tapped the book with his fingertip.
Let me get back to the fact that the universe speaks to us constantly. And this little puppy barks loudly.
He shoved it against Nick's chest.
Guard this with your life, because in the right hands, it is your life and your death. You've bled in this book. and it is the most personal of possessions you'll ever have. A master wizard, witch, upper-level demon, or any number of other entities can use it to control or destroy you. In fact, guard every possession you have, every stray hair, every particle of skin and clothing. Let no one near anything you have ever owned or will own. You're special, kid, in ways you can't conceive, and you will have to guard your back every second you want to keep breathing.
He definitely didn't like the sound of that. Aren't you just Merry Sunshine?
There's a reason they call me Grim.
Yeah, no kidding. Nick returned his book to his back pocket. So, how does this divination junk work, anyway?
Think of it as the cold chill you get down your spine whenever someone walks on your grave. That niggling sensation that tells you not to do something, and when you disregard it, you wish you hadn't.
Kind of like getting out of bed this morning?
Grim rolled his eyes. Frick, frack.
He snapped at his two skulking minions.
Get started cleaning this place while Nick and I work.
Without a word or hesitation, Payne took the mop from Nick. Suffering moved to pick up Glass. Wow, where have you two been all my life?
Payne quirked an eyebrow as he mopped the floor.
Walking hand in hand with you. Haven't you noticed?
Nick fell silent as he realized the truth of that statement. He had walked hand in hand with pain and suffering since the hour of his birth. Bitter poverty and the worst sort of bullying. Heck, he'd even been shot by one of his best friends, who'd intended to kill him dead in the gutter. Yeah, they'd definitely been his constant companions. He looked back at Grim.
Come to think of it, can we leave them behind?
Grim appeared offended by his question. No, they're my best friends.
Yeah, but I don't want to be in pain, and I definitely don't want to suffer.
Well, the only way to avoid them is to die.
Grim gave him a hopeful smile that chilled him all the way to his soul. Okay, let's change the topic now. He pointed to the wall behind Grim. Oh, look, a chicken! Grim made a sound of extreme frustration.
Fine. Let's begin with something even you can't screw up.
Way to build up my crappy confidence there. You should volunteer for the suicide hotline.
What makes you think I don't?
Nick screwed his face up. Ah, oh, man, that's wrong on so many levels.
Je suis ce que je suis.
Nick took a step back. Last night had taught him to be wary of any foreign words. Is that a spell?
Grim shook his head. It's French, Nick. Means I am what I am.
Jeez, kid, get educated. Read a book. I promise you it's not painful. I would definitely argue that. Have you seen my summer reading list? It's nothing but girl books about them getting body parts and girl things I don't want to discuss in class with my female English teacher. Maybe in the boys' locker room and maybe with a coach, but not with a woman teacher in front of other girls who already won't go out with me. Or worse, they're about how bad all of us men reek and how we need to be taken out and shot because we're an affront to all social and natural order. Again, thanks, Teach. Give the girls even more reason to kick us down when we talk to one. Not like it's not hard enough to get up the nerve to ask one out. Can you say inappropriate content? And then they tell me my manga's bad. Right. Is it too much to ask that we have one book, just one, on the required reading list that says, hey, girls, guys are fun, and we're okay, really. We're not all mean, psycho-killing, blood-sucking animals. Most of us are pretty darn decent, and if you'll just give us a chance, you'll find out we're not so bad. Grim let out a bored sigh.
Are you through ranting?
Maybe. Grim slapped him on the back so hard he stumbled.
Puberty is embarrassing. That's the point of it. Get used to it. And look on the bright side. Once you survive the teen horrors and degradations, adulthood is easy.
Great. Just great. Nick scoffed. And for the record, I do read lots of things, which is how I know it can be painful. Very, very painful.
Grim rubbed at his forehead like his head was starting to hurt.
Then he pulled at the gold chain around his neck to expose a strange hematite pendulum that had a gold skull securing it to the chain. He held it out toward Nick. Nick hesitated before he took it. He ran his hand down the cold stone, noting that the skull had eyes made of blood-red rubies.
The point of the hematite was so sharp, he could probably use it to stake Kyrian should his boss ever get too frisky with him. Especially cool. He could also use it to prick his finger if he needed to ask his book a question. Yeah, this thing had a lot of uses.
"What you hold is one of the keys of the universe."
Grimm's voice had dropped an octave.
"You can use a pendulum to answer questions, locate things, and..."
"What sort of things? Can it find my mom's keys when she loses them?"
"Yes,"
Grimm said between clenched teeth.
"It can also locate people you seek."
Okay, now that was handy. Nick swung it back and forth on its chain. "How does it work?"
Grimm captured it in his hand and used the sharp tip to point at him. "It allows you to get in touch with your higher consciousness. In time, you won't need it to do that. You'll be able to access that part of yourself any time you need to. But for now, you'll require a tool to help you channel all the teenage hormonal ADD that's bouncing around and through you."
He touched the tip to Nick's nose.
"The best part of this one is that the stone will change to meet your needs."
"What do you mean?"
"For simple questions, it won't matter what the stone is. You can use any kind of pendulum made out of any substance. A ring, a stick, even a pen or pencil. But as we progress to other tasks, the material it's made out of will matter exponentially. This one is currently hematite because that's the strongest stone of protection. It limits and deflects negativity. Something you need, kid. And it will protect you. Evil and negativity gravitate to the hematite, and if you're attacked badly enough, the stone will shatter and warn you while it deflects those powers away from you."
Yeah, Nick could be pretty negative most days, and that was without trying. Once he put his mind to it, he could be really pissy. Grimm gave it back to him.
"Pull your book out."
Since Grimm had already bogarted it from his pocket without touching it, he knew better than to delay. Nick grabbed it and handed it over. Grimm flipped to a blank page. Nick frowned as words and letters magically appeared with arrows. In a weird way, it reminded him of a Ouija board. The two arrows intersected, forming a square cross with the words yes and no highlighted. No, wait. They were glowing. "What's it doing?" he asked Grimm.
"This is your pendulum map. It'll answer any yes or no question you ask. All you have to do is focus your mind on the question and hover the pendulum over the page. In time, you'll be able to ask more complicated questions and it'll spell out the answers."
Duly awesome. Nick did as he suggested and hovered the stone above the words. He carefully kept his hand steady as he focused on the most important question he wanted an answer to. "Will I lose my Hey! Grimm snatched it from him.
"Stop being stupid and take this seriously."
Nick glared. "Can't work with it if you snatch it out of my hands." He grudgingly gave it back. Nick wrapped the chain around his forefinger. "What's wrong with asking that anyway?"
"It's a stupid concern."
Bullcrap on that. It was the primary one he'd had for the last year. Well, that, and if he'd ever be able to afford a car. "What are you, asexual or something?" Payne laughed, then abruptly stopped as Death jerked his head in his companion's direction.
"My libido is fine, Nick. However, it takes a distant second place to my need to kill people who annoy me."
Normally, Nick would have mocked him for that, but he knew better. "Fine." He returned the pendulum and asked his second most often asked question. "Will I ever be rich?" At first, nothing happened. But after a few seconds, it began to swing along the yes line. Something that made his blood rush. "Really rich?" It swung even harder. Oh yeah, he definitely rocked to this. Like Rockefeller rich? Grimm snatched it away from him again.
"Yes, kid, you'll have money. Can we move on?"
"I suppose, but I'd really like to investigate the future of my not being broke a little more. I like that thought a lot."
Grimm sighed heavily. "I swear I'm getting a migraine."
"My mom suffers with those a lot, too.
Being around you, I imagine she does.
With anyone else, Nick would have smarted off, but he didn't have a death wish right now. Maybe later. Nick cupped the pendulum in his palm. What else can this do?
Right now, nothing. Learn one technique, and I'll teach you others. You can't do geometry until you understand 1 + 1 = 2. Besides, you two need to get acquainted with each other.
Nick scowled. What, are we dating?
Grim stared at him with a blank expression for several heartbeats.
And now that my blood pressure and patience have breached their safety valves, I'm going to take a break and leave you here to clean your mess.
He snapped his fingers.
Pain, suffering, come.
Like two dutiful pets, they vanished right alongside him, leaving the mop to fall on the floor with a loud slap.
Dang, couldn't they have finished first?
It's what you get for running your stupid Cajun mouth, boy.
His mom always said that 90% of intelligence was knowing when to shut up. One day, he'd learn to heed her wisdom. Sighing, he went to the mop and picked it up to finish. But he'd barely gotten back on it when he heard someone knocking on the front door. He turned to tell them the Triple B was closed when he saw it was Caleb. Up until yesterday, he thought Caleb was just another overprivileged jackweed at his high school. Well, not entirely true. Caleb had never been mean to him, so he didn't really qualify for jackweed status. But he had ignored Nick. During the chaos of last night, Nick had learned that Caleb Malfas, captain of the football team and Mr. Popularity, was actually a high-level, he forgot the proper term because it just wasn't that important to him, demon, who'd been sent to serve as Nick's bodyguard. How cool was that? Nick held his hands up and gestured, letting Caleb know there was nothing he could do to let him in. Caleb looked to his right, and then to his left, before he disintegrated on the sidewalk. He turned into a filmy red smoke that slid through the crack of the doors. It snaked across the ground like a weird mist and reassembled into Caleb in front of Nick. He arched a brow at Nick. You keep using that arm, boy, and everyone's gonna know you ain't right. Nick handed him the mop and returned his arm to the sling. I'm working on that. Always dressed impeccably in designer threads, Caleb had dark hair and intelligent eyes. He also possessed the kind of body and face that Nick would kill for, muscled and Hollywood good-looking. While Nick wasn't ugly, he was still gangly and awkward like most guys his age. His body was growing so fast that he never seemed to know where his limbs were, so he was always banging into something or busting his knees. The worst part was that at school, he constantly stepped on girl feet whenever he took a seat in the cafeteria. Yeah, no wonder he couldn't get a girlfriend. So, how are you feeling this morning? Nick asked.
Like I got my ass kicked by a bunch of psycho demons. How are you?
Slightly better than that, but only slightly. What brings you here?
I tried to call you and got no answer. After last night, it worried me. I was afraid something might have eaten you for the few hours I dared to try to heal, so here I am, making sure you're still breathing and that I continue to do so.
Weird. His phone hadn't rung at all. Nick pulled out his phone and checked it. Sure enough, he had a missed call. Grim must have blocked it. Evil death troll. But it made sense. Death wouldn't want to be interrupted. Caleb jerked his chin at Nick.
What are you doing here?
Bubba and Mark have me cleaning.
Caleb rolled his eyes. Please.
He snapped his fingers, and everything went back to the way it had been before the fighting. Nick gaped, impressed by his friend's psychic demon powers.
Man, I gotta learn how to do that.
But I should probably mention that this will out us faster than my using an arm that's supposed to be injured. Caleb grumbled before he returned the broken doors and enough of the damage that it would look like normal cleaning.
By the way, I got a strange call this morning.
From?
New football coach.
Nick scratched his chin at that news.
Dude, that was fast.
Tell me about it. He said it was because of the state finals that the school called him up and offered him the job yesterday afternoon.
Nick let out a low whistle. They'd barely allow the old coach to get booked for killing their principal before they'd hired his replacement. That was so cold.
What else did he say?
He asked me if I knew you.
Since we're down about half the team due to the zombie attack, he needs replacement players.
Caleb inclined his neck to Nick's arm.
I told him you were injured and couldn't play. He said at this point, he'd take a couple of bench warmers just to fill out the roster and jerseys so that we wouldn't have to forfeit the playoffs.
I can definitely warm a bench. It's what my mom says I'm best at anyway.
What the? How you get in here?
They both turned to see Bubba staring at them from the curtain. Caleb indicated Nick with his thumb.
Nick let me in. In how?
Bubba rushed to the doors to make sure they were still chained closed.
I squeezed in through the opening. I'm like a mouse. Doesn't take much room for me.
Bubba gave him a suspicious grimace.
Don't do that again. You could have broke something, and then your parents would have sued me.
Sorry. Bubba glanced around the cleaned-up store before turning his attention to Nick.
Good job, Snotnose. Looks great in here.
Caleb helped.
Way to pitch in and get things done. Now, if I could get Mark to put down his phone and stop taking breaks, we'd be able to finish up before Oprah comes on.
Caleb exchanged an amused grin with Nick.
Bubba, what are you going to do when they cancel her show?
Shut your mouth, boy. That's sacrilege in this store. You talk like that, and I'll toss you through the window like an old-timey bum in a western.
Caleb took a step back. Given that I was almost roasted alive in your SUV last night, I don't want any more injuries for a while if I can help it.
Bubba pointed at him. Remember that.
Then he turned around and left them. Caleb shook his head.
That is the strangest man.
Tell me about it. When Caleb moved closer, the pendulum began to heat up, so much so that Nick hissed in pain. He pulled it out. Caleb's eyes flashed to their bright yellow-orange demon snake form.
Where did you get that?
A cold lump settled deep in Nick's stomach as he contemplated what that reaction meant.
I was told it would protect me from evil.
Why did it react to you, Caleb?
What aren't you telling me?
No sooner had he asked the question than he saw an image flash through his mind. It was a vision of Caleb killing him.
Chapter 5.
What are you doing, Ambrose?
Ambrose moved away from his black scrying mirror that he'd been using to watch the past unfold in an entirely new direction. With the flick of his hand, he laid it down on his ornately carved black desk and covered it with a black silk cloth as he confronted the last being he wanted to deal with. Savitar. Born to be a failsafe to the gods who might abuse their powers, Savitar was one of the very few creatures taller than Nick. Dressed in a pair of white cargo pants and an open, light blue cotton shirt, Savitar smelled like a sunny day at the beach. Normal for him, since he lived on a vanishing island, where he spent the better part of his days surfing. His dark hair held highlights from the sun, and his face had at least 3 days' growth of whiskers around his goatee. Because of his ancient age, he was born not long after the dawn of time, and his omnipotent powers, Savitar was used to people wetting themselves the moment he entered a room. Ambrose wasn't most people, and it had been centuries since Savitar had frightened him even a little. Stepping away from his desk, he went to pour himself a drink. Not wine or water, but rather the chilled blood of a peritile demon. Vintage age and packed full of the nutrients he needed to live. That was, if anyone was dumb enough to qualify his current existence as living. Ambrose took a drink and savored it. Not quite as satisfying as when the demon had begged to have his life spared, but still fresh and heady. A slight smile quirked his mouth as he remembered killing the demon. He never understood how creatures who were so brutal and merciless to others expected someone else to show them the pity they'd been unable to dispense to their victims. A peculiar hypocrisy, to be sure.
Since when do I answer your questions?
Savitar's expression would have terrified the gods themselves, but since Ambrose was their scourge, it had no effect on him whatsoever.
You are tampering with powers you don't understand.
Ambrose raked a glare from the top of Savitar's windswept hair to the bottom of his bare feet.
I find that funny as hell coming from you.
Yeah, and when I did it, I almost destroyed the world.
The irony here was that Ambrose was actually trying to save it. He already knew how the world would end, the date, the moment, the screams of the humans as they realized it was all over and everything they'd once valued was now completely worthless. That no amount of begging or bartering could help them.
Time was drawing close. He could feel the last of his humanity leaving him with the tick of every passing second.
And when it did, the world was doomed. There was no longer anyone who could stop him. Not even Savitar.
I know what I'm doing. Savitar ground his teeth.
No, Nick. You don't.
Nick. Savitar was the last of those who used his real name anymore. And the Thonian did so only when he wanted to get Ambrose's full attention. Ambrose glanced back to where his black mirror lay covered. And he remembered how things had been when he was a boy. If he could just go back for one tiny nanosecond. The smallest decisions made had such profound repercussions. One 10-minute wait could save a life or end it. One wrong turn down the right street or one seemingly unimportant conversation and everything was changed. It wasn't right that each lifetime was defined, ruined, ended, and made by such seemingly innocuous details. A major life-altering event should come with a flashing warning sign that either said abandon all hope or safety ahead. It was the cruelest joke of all that no one could see the most vicious curves until they were over the edge, falling into the abyss below. As Ambrose started away, Savitar grabbed his arm and pulled him to his side. His lavender eyes flared to a deep red.
You are awakening powers and bringing new players into your past. Players whose actions none of us know. You asked me yesterday about Nakoda. You don't remember her because she wasn't originally in your past. It's your meddling now that took her to your door when you were a kid. And she's not the only one. Don't you understand? Your father was supposed to die before you hit puberty. That is the natural order. And that event was imperative for your growth and safety. Now he's alive when he shouldn't be. And you're amassing powers at an age when...
I wasn't supposed to have an older brother either, was I?
Savitar looked away. Exactly. Life-altering events. Unseen disasters. Little things that became... Best not to go there. Ambrose curled his lip.
You, Asheron, Artemis, my father, all of you kept your little secrets from me. Now I am trying to repair your mistakes. And in the process, you're making entirely new ones. Ones we can't foresee yet. I can't foresee yet. Do you understand what I'm saying?
He did. And there was one thing he saw clearest of all.
Then you don't know if what I'm doing is wrong.
Savitar cursed.
You can't rewrite the past. No one can, not without terrifying consequences.
I am the Malachi, Nick sneered at him. I don't take orders from you, Thonian.
Designed to be the police of the natural order and protectors of man, Thonians had been bestowed powers that would allow them to kill a god if need be. But those powers didn't work on creatures like Nick. Born of the darkest part of the universe, the Malachi were immune to all but one. And that one wasn't here to stop him from the destiny he'd been born to. Ultimate destruction. Tick. Talk. Savitar took a deep breath.
Fine. Hang on to that ego.
He pointed to Ambrose's mirror.
What you've done is tapped your powers at an age when you were most vulnerable. Why do you think they were hidden in the first place?
What you have done is unleashed the hounds of hell all over a young kid who's incapable of fighting them.
But Nick would learn. He knew himself and his survival instincts. Nick wouldn't go down, ever.
I sent him a protector.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Ask Asheron what happens when people tamper with the fates of others, even when all they were trying to do was protect them.
Oh, wait. I forgot. You can't do that anymore, can you?
Savitar's gaze seared him with an accusation he didn't even want to contemplate.
Right now, in New Orleans, a 14-year-old kid is being stalked.
By?
You know the answer. They're there to shut you down and make you bleed. You think you've suffered now? Just wait and see what you've unleashed on yourself, and this time you have no one else to blame. You did this with all of us trying to stop you.
Savitar flicked at the talisman around Ambrose's neck.
You think you understand those powers because of what you are and the centuries you've lived. You don't understand shit.
He was wrong about that. Ambrose understood fully. Most of all, he knew what was about to happen if he didn't change it. Honestly, would it have been so bad had he died as a kid? Part of him wondered if that was all it would take to stop the wheel from turning, to keep the end from coming. Saddest of all was that every time he'd tried to kill himself, something had prevented it. Except for the one time that was most important. Nothing he'd tried yet had prevented that from happening. One shot, and all because of Asheron's curse. There had to be some way to break that. He stroked the medallion. This was his last chance. After centuries of mistakes and miscalculations, if it didn't work this time, it was over for all of them. He didn't care that his life would end. As far as he was concerned, his life had ended when he was 24. It was all the others who would pay. They were the ones he was trying to save, the ones he'd once loved, the innocent who didn't deserve what was coming to them. Help me. He was slipping, and it was getting dark. Cold. Terrifying. Right now, he didn't see an alternative ending. Not even with his meddling. Every road seemed to lead him back to this time and place. Back to what was coming, a war the world wouldn't survive. Trying not to think about the future he saw so clearly, Ambrose poured himself another drink. You never answered my original question. Who and what is Nakota? Completely stoic, Savitar shrugged.
The truth? I don't know.
I don't know. Those words echoed in his head. The one thing he'd learned over the centuries of dealing with Savitar. Whenever the Thonian said that, it meant one thing. And it was never good. Batten down the hatches. Things are going to get even bloodier. Chapter 6. Caleb let out a deep sound of supreme annoyance as he tried to keep Nick from wetting on the floor. Calm down, I'm a demon, Nick. Hematite doesn't like my genetics. It doesn't mean anything other than I have really bad parentage. Then why am I having flashes of you killing me?
What'd you eat this morning?
Nick didn't care for that answer, not one little bit. I saw it happen. You were choking the life out of me. Caleb rolled his eyes.
Oh, yeah, that is definitely a figment of your overactive, over-Hollywood-stimulated imagination, I assure you. I don't kill people that way. Takes too long. I'm not into torture. I prefer a quick death so that I can move on to something more satisfying.
Strangely enough, that, he believed. Patience wasn't a virtue Caleb practiced.
You sure? Dude, look at me. You think I'd have let the demons pound all over me last night so that you could escape? If I had any intention of killing you. Really? I've had enough pain in my existence. At this point, I'd like to avoid any more. Get your head out of your sphincter and use your three brain cells to think it through.
Nick raked his hand through his hair as he finally calmed down. Last night, Caleb had gone above and beyond. He was right. Nick had no reason to doubt his loyalty. Sorry, I don't know what to think anymore. I have all this weirdness inside me.
It's called puberty.
Besides that, Nick said drolly, actually, I miss that being my only problem. I just don't know what to think anymore. Because every person around him wasn't who or what he thought they were.
It's all right. I don't blame you for not trusting me. I'll be honest, I'm not above betrayal. However, if I betray you, I don't want to face that demon. So you're safe until I figure out a way to get out of my slavery.
Well, that said it all about their relationship. Appreciate the honesty.
You should, since it's a rarity for me.
Caleb yawned.
Glad to see you're still breathing.
Glad to be breathing, especially since he'd spent the last hour before Caleb's arrival entertaining death. Not too many people could make that claim. Caleb chucked him on the arm.
Don't forget about your sling.
You leaving?
No need my being here. You're not under threat and I'm still exhausted. I'm gonna rest. Not as young as I used to be.
How old are you?
Caleb laughed. That many zeros and you just get tired of counting. Old enough to know better, young enough to do it anyway.
He winked at him.
Catch you later.
He literally vaporized in front of him. I have so got to learn those powers. What would it be like to do anything he wanted? To have all the money and time and powers he could dream of? He couldn't imagine anything more awesome. Closing his eyes, he conjured an image of himself as an adult. Only he didn't see him. He saw Ambrose in his mind, and he didn't look happy. Weird, Ambrose stood in front of a giant ornate hearth where a huge fire blazed. The flames flickered in a pair of eyes that were inhumanly green. With one hand braced against the stone mantel, he stared into the fire looking lost and sad. Heartbroken.
Don't become me, Nick.
It wasn't Ambrose's voice he heard. It was deeper, sinister, and it sent a chill down his spine. I'm losing my mind. He had to be. There was no other explanation. Hey, Nick, need a hand? He blinked at the sound of Mark's shout. Pushing everything out of his mind, he went to help them. Hours went by as they put everything back and repaired the plaster walls. Just after 3, Nick left them to walk over to Café du Monde. Nakoda had promised to meet him there after school. Even though school had been canceled, he hoped she'd show, and in case she did, he didn't want her to think he'd stood her up. It didn't take long to reach the covered pavilion that was bustling with tourists and a few locals. World famous and a New Orleans tradition since the mid-19th century, the Café du Monde was a must-see for everyone. Open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, except on Christmas and during hurricanes, this was one of Nick's favorite haunts. The menu was reasonably priced. Okay, it was cheap, which was why he could afford to come here for a rare treat, and extremely limited. Basically water, milk, soft drinks, orange juice, and chicory coffee. But the real reason to be here was for the powdered sugar beignets. French donuts that didn't have holes in them. Messy as all get out, they were the tastiest thing he'd ever eaten. Forget cookies, beignets ruled. As he stood on the corner of St. Anne and Decatur, waiting for the light to change so that he could cross the street, he saw 3 musicians playing in front of the cafe.
Hey, Nick,
the trombone player called to him as he made it across and neared the entrance. Nick smiled at the older African-American man who'd been playing jazz and zydeco on the street as far back as he could remember. At night, he played in several of the clubs around town. Hey, Lucas, how you doing?
Just fine. Hope your mama's well.
You know I take good care of her. How's your daughter doing? She's settling into school okay? Lucas's wife had died of cancer 4 years ago, leaving him alone to raise Keisha, who'd graduated last spring. Now she was up at LSU taking classes, wanting to be a cancer researcher one day.
She loves it so much, I'm having a hard time getting her to come home to visit. Can you believe it? Never thought she'd leave. Now I doubt I'll get her back.
Nick laughed. I'm sure she'll be home soon. How could she not? Thomas, the drummer, tapped his drumsticks together to let them know it was time for another song.
Lifting his trombone, Lucas inclined his head to Nick before he joined in with them to play Iko Iko. Nick cringed. While he loved the song, it was one of those that never failed to give him a vicious earworm. He'd be hearing it in his head for at least the next 3 days. Hey now, Iko Iko on day. See, it was already starting. Oh man, someone shoot me. As he looked around for an empty table, his gaze was caught by something pink and creamy. When his gaze focused on the girl's face, his stomach plummeted south. With soft brown hair and great big eyes, he was the most beautiful girl in the world. Nakota. And when she recognized him, the prettiest smile he'd ever seen lit her entire face and did things to him he barely understood. His body was hot and cold all at once. His throat turned dry, and part of him wanted to turn around and run for cover. Yeah, that would be the smart thing to do. When have you ever been smart? Before he knew what he was doing, his feet took him to her table. Hi, she said, flashing him an adorable dimple. How could one syllable sound like a heavenly choir? Yet that was the sweetest sound he'd ever heard. It even sent a shiver down his spine. Hey! Say something else. Quick! Why was his mind completely blank? It wasn't like he'd never spoken to her before. Heck, she'd even kissed him last night. Yeah, and he could still taste her lips. That was the problem, he realized. It was so awkward to see her after they'd kissed. Had he screwed it up? Had it been okay for her? Ugh, God, I'm pathetic. I don't even know how to talk to a girl. At this rate, he'd never get a girlfriend. She glanced around nervously. You wanna sit down? She stretched the words out like maybe she was as uncomfortable as he was. Oh no, don't tell me she's gonna give me the let's be friends speech. He hated that SOB. Yeah. His hand shaking, he pulled the vinyl chair back and took a seat. Sorry, I'm a space cadet today. My mom got me up way too early this morning, and I'm not fully awake after last night. Then Bubba had me helping clean his store. I could really go for a nap. You're yammering too much, and don't talk about beds, or she might think you're inviting her to something that might offend her or get you slapped. How are you feeling? Yeah, that was a safe topic for both of them. Glad to be alive. The waitress came up to take their order. Nick started to tell her to bring him water when he remembered that for once, he actually had cash from Kirian and Mr. Poitier. Thank God, he could even cover Cody's tab. 2 orders of beignets and a chocolate milk for me, he looked over at Nakota. What would you like to drink?
The milk sounds good. I'll have that too.
The waitress headed off. Have you heard anything about what happened at school? He asked her. School was usually another safe topic.
Not yet. What about you?
Nothing other than we have a new coach. She looked as shocked as he'd been.
Really?
Yeah, scary, right? I think they replaced the coach before they finished mopping the blood up in the hallway. Nick cringed as soon as he heard those words come out of his mouth.
Don't talk about blood with a girl, are you stupid?
Luckily, she changed the subject for him.
How's your arm feeling?
Better, no pain at all today.
Good.
Then it was awkward again. But the one thing he was grateful for was the fact that she was still a girl. Plain and simple. Not a shapeshifter, vampire slayer, or a demon. Just another human being having a bite with him. It was good to be around normal again.
So, do you like New Orleans? He asked her. Is it different from where you lived before?
Very different, but I like it. Except for the heat, I can't believe it's still this warm in October.
Yeah, well, there's an old saying here, if you don't like the weather, wait a minute. We can swing from hot to cold faster than a turbo wash with a tankless system.
Nakota felt her guard slipping as she laughed at his humor.
It's his demon glamour, don't fall for it.
But it was hard. Nick O'Shea was charming and sweet, adorable. Gorgeous, with eyes so blue it should be a sin, and thick brown hair that begged to be touched. At 14, the promise of the man he'd grow into was already there. The chiseled features and sharp intelligence. And even though he was lean, his muscle tone was perfect and showed that in time, he would be well defined. The best part was, he had no idea
just how handsome he was. Timid and unsure, yet he could tap some of the most destructive forces ever unleashed. Once he was grown, he would have the potential to become evil in its purest, coldest form. She must never lose sight of that. Still, his smile was infectious. His kindness, touching. When she went to pay for her food, he stopped her and took care of the bill. He wouldn't even let her tip the waitress. Then he excused himself and took his change so that he could drop it in the trombone case for the street musicians. He didn't keep a single cent of it. She arched a brow at that. I thought you were really poor. He blushed profusely. I am, but I've got a new job that pays well, and I believe in sharing my good fortune whenever I have some. Lucas helps his daughter at school, so I figure he needs it more than I do. That's really sweet of you. I have moments of that, but don't tell anyone. Let that be our secret. She smiled at his sincerity. He was so different from the Malachi she'd once battled. How could this generous boy have come from the most evil of all powers? It was inconceivable, and yet there he sat, caring, joking, precious. But for the fact she knew better, she'd swear they had identified the wrong person, and yet somehow this boy in front of her would grow into a demon who would one day end the world, a demon she'd have to kill. If she had any brains, she'd do it right now, before those powers grew stronger, but she had protocols to follow. There was still a chance that he could be saved. A bargain made. She had to honor that bargain, even though it went against every part of her being. Like him, she'd been born a soldier, her sole duty to protect the natural order and to put down any and all enemies, including charming teenage boys. The wealth of a soul is measured by how much it can feel. Its poverty, by how little. Right now, in this time and place, Nick's soul was rich and pure. If they could keep it this way, he wouldn't be lost. A tool they could use and a power they could harness. That was the landscape they were painting. And failure wasn't an option. Nick had the sudden feeling that Cody was dissecting him like some mutant lab experiment. Did I sprout a new head? She blinked. What? You look like you're trying to figure me out. I probably shouldn't say anything, but it's making me really uncomfortable. I'm sorry, I didn't mean anything by it. I was just... Never mind. Some things a woman has to keep to herself. Hey, good quality people, what are you doing out and about in the daylight? Nick grinned at the high-pitched, sing-songy voice that belonged to Simi, another newbie he'd met last night. She'd shown up to help them all out, and boy, had she ever. Hi, Simi, want to join us? Her hair was jet black with red streaks running through it. Today she had it pulled up in pigtails that were held with spiked bands that matched the spiked collar around her neck. A good 6 feet tall, she also wore stacked boots that added another 4 to 5 inches to her height. Her short skirt was a purple plaid that matched her purple fishnet top and black tank. She plopped down in the chair next to Cody and opened her coffin-shaped purse. Nick exchanged a frown with Cody as Simi pulled out a lobster bib and tied it around her neck. Next came a small bottle of hot sauce. Their waitress came up with a big smile on her face. Hi, Simi. Your usual?
Absolutely, Tracy. Keep 'em coming till the Simi pops.
The waitress laughed.
Girl, I don't know where you put it. I swear you have hollow legs.
Ooh, the Simi wishes. Then she could eat even more. Yum!
Laughing, the waitress headed back to the kitchen.
How often you eat here? Nick asked.
Simi pulled out several napkins from the silver dispenser and put them in her lap.
Whenever we're in town and Akri lets me.
Akri. She kept mentioning that name last night, too, but Nick had no idea who it was, even though Simi acted like he should. Who's Akri? She huffed in irritation.
The Simi's daddy. Silly partial human, don't you know nothing?
Nick opened his mouth to respond, but the moment he did, he saw... He wasn't sure. It was rapid-fire images. Him and Simi, only it wasn't him, it was
another time and place. No, it was here. No, he saw her as a demon with wings and horns. His head spun as he tried to sort through the kaleidoscope that left him feeling sick to his stomach.
Nick? Cody asked in a concerned tone. Are you all right?
Simi answered for him.
He's fine. Just freaking out, because the Simi's a demon and he didn't know until now. He'll be all right in a few.
She held his glass of milk out to him.
This'll help.
Nick blinked as he tried to calm down. Am I dreaming? Cody hadn't reacted to Simi's news at all. In fact, she acted as if she hadn't heard it. Maybe she hadn't. Maybe Simi was like Grimm, and he and Tracy were the only ones who could see and hear her. Still, the images tore through his head, making it hard to focus on anything. He could barely catch his breath. I have to get away from here. His head pounding, he looked at Cody. I need to go. I gotta leave. I'll catch you later, okay?
You sure you don't need me to help you?
No, I mean, yeah, I'm sure.
He got up and stumbled away from them. He didn't know where to go, so he headed toward the only safe place he could think of. His mom.
Cody arched a brow as she watched Nick hurry away from them.
Was that you or me who spooked him?
Pretty sure it was me,
Simi grinned.
The Simi has that effect, or is it affect on people? Affect, effect. What is this difference between those two words? And really, does it matter?
Some people get so testy when you misuse a word, but I likes doing it. Language should be fun, and so long as people know what you mean, what difference does it make? Really, really, really?
Cody shook her head at the Karanti. Simi belonged to an ancient race of demons who'd been created to protect the Atlantean gods. Now, she was assigned watch duty to only one of them, Acheron Parthenopaeus. While she knew of the ancient god, she'd never met him. For many reasons. One being the fact that Acheron didn't want anyone to know about his godhood. It was a well-kept secret, and she could respect that. The only reason she knew of his identity was that they had a mutual friend. One who, like Nick, could see the truth no matter how hard someone or something tried to hide it. The waitress returned with 10 plates of beignets and a large milk for Simi.
Ooh, the Simi's favorite person is always the one who brings her food. Thank you, Tracy.
You're welcome, Simi.
Simi pulled out a handful of cash and handed it over.
You keep the change and have fun with it.
By Tracy's expression, it was obvious Simi had seriously overtipped her.
You sure about that?
Absolutely.
Simi drenched the beignets with her hot sauce.
Thank you.
Tracy went to wait on another table. Nakota cringed as Simi took a bite. And on that note,
it was nice seeing you again, Simi, but I think I need to be going.
Simi wiped at the powder on her face.
Okay, but Nakota Akra needs to know something important.
That is?
They something evil done come to town and set up shot... No, shop. That's the word I need.
What kind of evil?
Simi licked her lips before she answered.
Akri not sure. Can you not feel it?
Nakota snorted.
In this town? There's all kinds of spirits here, and quite a few of them are hostile.
True, which is why the Simi likes to come here. I eat the evil and Akri all happy. There's no Simi. If it's something that preys on people, the Simi can eat all that she wants to.
Yeah, the Simi was a unique being.
Do you think this evil is Nick?
Simi shook her head.
No! The evil is stalking him.
Chapter 7. Nick paused outside the Mediterranean Greek cafe on Decatur to catch his breath. At least the images had finally stopped shifting through his head, and he had some clarity of thought. Not much, but better than it had been when he'd left the Café du Monde. At least now the people around him looked normal.
Man, how had the hippies in the 60s ever survived drug binges? What idiot would do this to himself intentionally? It was bad enough when it happened by accident. Who would want to live like this if they could stop it?
Nick rubbed his eyes and took a deep, fortifying breath. All of a sudden, he heard a bell sound as the door to the restaurant opened, and out came a beautiful dream. For a second, he thought he was still hallucinating. As Casey Woods,
one of the cheerleaders from his school, stopped in front of him. Up until Makota had joined their class, Casey had been the only woman for him. Her long dark hair was always brushed until it shone, and her curves were killer in street clothes, but in her cheerleader uniform, they were the stuff of legends. He'd spent more days than he could count trying to imagine how great life would be with her as a girlfriend. Unlike the Neanderthal she went with, he'd actually treat her right and dote on her. Unfortunately, she hadn't even noticed he was alive. An impressive feat, since he'd sat right beside and in front of her in several classes over the years. But hey, Casey was Casey. And a girl that popular couldn't be bothered to notice the poor, awkward scholarship student who had invaded their ranks. For that matter, almost no one in his school really saw him as anything other than a target to be kicked and bullied. Dressed in a lacy blue top and a pair of jeans, she smiled as she caught sight of him.
Hey, Nick, you okay?
Oh, yeah. He had to be in a coma or something. The last time Casey had been this close to him, she'd argued with her best friend that she had no idea who he was.
All good?
She frowned at him.
You don't look good. You look kind of green. Are you going to hurl?
I hope not, because that was all he'd need for this day to be even better. Barf all over their homecoming queen. Yeah, that'd just make it for him and get him relegated to loser status until the day they graduated. To his complete shock, she reached out and touched his forehead.
You don't have a fever.
She held her bottle of water out toward him.
Here, sip some of this and see if it helps.
Stunned, he straightened. Are you all right?
Of course. Why would you ask that?
Because she had never been this nice to him ever? Honestly, it was scary. Was the apocalypse coming? Was this death in disguise screwing with him? Now that would make sense. There had to be some horrifyingly foul reason why Ms. Hottie Snotty was talking to him like he was normal. You and I don't normally hang out. She smiled.
I know. My bad. But now that you're hanging with Tad, it's okay.
Ah, that explained it. Tad Adams was one of the cool, rich kids, the older brother of Nick's friend Brynna. He'd taken him to school with Casey the other day. Man, she was shallow. Most people didn't admit that about themselves. He had to give her credit that at least she was honest. He shrugged the water away. I'm fine. He indicated his arm in the sling. Pain got to me for a minute, but I'm all good now.
Oh, okay.
She pulled the water back and cradled it against her breasts. Second thought, he should have taken it.
By the way, have you heard the latest gossip?
That we have a new coach? She blinked at him with a vacuous expression.
We have a new coach?
Obviously not the gossip she'd heard. Yeah, Caleb told me about him.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. Good. I know Stone and Rick were worried about us making it to state this year with the team down and the coach arrested.
Stone. It took all Nick's willpower not to curl his lip at the mention of that pig. No, dog. He just learned last night that Stone was a shape-shifting werewolf who was a pig in both incarnations. Not wanting to think about Stone and his running crew of imbeciles, Nick turned Casey back to their original discussion. What did you hear?
Oh, there's been a rash of thefts at school. Tanya went in to get her homework this morning from the office, and she overheard the secretaries talking about it. A bunch of lockers were broken into, and some things were taken out of classrooms.
No kidding?
She said it was a bad scene. Hope you had nothing in your locker worth stealing.
He snorted. He didn't own anything worth stealing. Just books. They're free to take as many of those as they want.
I hear you. Oh, and she said we have a new principal they're bringing in from Baton Rouge. His name is, get this, Richard Head.
She burst out laughing. Nick winced as he saw the detention train a-coming. Dick Head. Oh, man, that was so wrong to have a name like that and go into education on a high school level. Twisted, twisted, twisted. And I'll bet he has no sense of humor about it.
You know it. But then again, you can call him Dickhead all you want and say you were only using his name.
True. Man, his parents must have hated his guts.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It did indeed.
Well, I guess I better get going. I need to check in with my mom at work.
Casey frowned.
Can't you call her?
It's her first day on this job, and I don't want to get her into trouble. If he got her fired again in less than 24 hours of losing her last job, she would absolutely kill him. Better to go poke his head in the door to see what she was up to than head over to Kyrian's to work.
I'll catch you later,
he started toward Ursuline.
You mind if I walk with you?
Nick's eyes widened as a total state of befuddled huh possessed him. You want to walk with me? She smiled a smile that warmed him completely.
Do you mind?
No.
Cool.
Then she did the most peculiar and amazing thing of all. She stepped forward and wrapped her arm around his good one so that they could walk arm in arm.
So, Brynna told me you have a job. Aren't you young to be working?
Am I in some alternate universe? Was his evil doppelganger going to shoot out of the alley and attack them like some character in a video game? All right, Grim, what's going on? Grim didn't answer. No one did. Casey stared up at him expectantly with a pair of goo-goo eyes that made his insides quiver. Come on, Nick, answer her question.
I've had a job since I was 12.
Really? Her eyes brightened. That's so impressive. For the first time in his life, he actually felt proud.
Well, I'm the man of the house, and I have to take care of my mom. I like buying her nice things, and I don't want to spend her money on her. That just seems wrong to me.
You know, it's so rare to find a boy who thinks that way. Last Christmas, Stone gave me his sister's earrings that their mother had given her that she didn't want. I was so angry when I found out. I didn't speak to him for 2 whole hours.
Wow. 2 whole hours? You really punished him.
She narrowed her gaze.
Are you mocking me?
I would never mock the homecoming queen, especially not when she's holding onto my arm. Why are you doing that, by the way? She rubbed her hand up and down his arm in a way that made him really uncomfortable.
You have nice arms. Manly.
Yeah, right. He had arms like the flying spaghetti monster. Hardly manly, more like thin and stringy. She started stroking his biceps. Nick jumped away from her.
Casey, I'm kind of seeing someone.
Though they weren't technically going together, he had feelings for Nakota, and he didn't want her to think he was two-timing her, even though he wasn't single-timing her either. Okay, that didn't make sense. Still, Casey put her hands on her hips.
Since when do you have a girlfriend?
Don't you have a boyfriend?
Not at the moment.
There was no missing the invitation in her tone or the one in her eyes. It was so tempting. Look, I really need to go. Before he could break clear, Casey pulled his phone out of his pocket with something that suspiciously felt like a grope. That and the hot look on her face sent a shiver over him. She put her phone number in and then added it to his speed dial.
Call me sometime.
This time, when she slid the phone back in, there was no missing her grope. Rising up on her tiptoes, she nipped his chin with her teeth and tongue.
But don't wait too long, Nick.
Her breath went straight into his ear, making his entire body burn. Stunned, scared, and intrigued, he couldn't move as she sashayed down the street. She cast a look at him over her shoulder and bit her lip in the most provocative way he'd ever seen. Oh, yeah. The world was definitely going to end. There had to be a countdown clock somewhere, because stuff like this didn't happen to Nick O'Shea. It was more believable that his classmates were turning into zombies out to kill him than it was for Casey Woods to come on to him. Why? Yesterday he'd been completely invisible to her. Today it was like someone had decloaked him in the middle of enemy territory. Unsure what to make of it all, Nick headed to Sanctuary. Is there no normality left anywhere?
Relax, kid.
Nick let out a relieved breath.
as he heard that familiar voice in his head. "Ambrose, bro, where have you been?"
"Busy. Why, have you missed me?"
"Not really. I just had one of the hottest girls in school come on to me."
"Casey Woods?"
"Yeah, how'd you know?"
"Relax. You'll end up taking her to your junior prom."
Nick arched a brow at that landmine Ambrose had shoved him into. "How do you know that?" he asked again.
"I know a lot of things about you, Nick. Past, present, and future. Casey isn't one of the people you need to fear. She'll be a good girlfriend in high school, and an even better friend later on."
And that, too, made him drop his jaw. "She's going to be my girlfriend?"
Ambrose laughed in his head. "Getting women won't be your problem. Keeping them is another. And whatever you do, make sure you don't ever touch Simi. Don't even hold her hand. Think of her and Tabitha Devereaux like sisters."
"Why?"
"Just do what I say."
This time he got the demon tone from Ambrose, that deep, guttural growl that actually made him jump. After a second, he heard Ambrose sigh.
"Sorry, Nick, but there are things you have to trust me on, things I can't explain. Believe me when I say I am truly the only person in your life besides your mother and Kyrian who truly has your back. When everyone else turns on you and seeks to bring you down, I'm the only one who will never betray you. You have to believe that."
"You say that, and yet, where have you been all my life? I never saw you once before last night."
"I've always been with you. From the moment you were born, there's never been a time in your life when I wasn't there beside you. Just like now, I see everything you see, hear what you hear, and feel what you feel."
"How?"
"I'll teach you that power in time. For now, please, trust me. One day you'll understand why I've been hidden all these years, and why I had to wait for certain things to happen before I made my presence known."
His mom always said that trust was something you earned, and it wasn't something you gave easy. Too often, it was a tool your enemies used to hurt you with. "Give them nothing, baby. Not until you have no choice. The world is harsh and it is cold. People can be good and decent, but most of them are only out for themselves, and they'll hurt anyone they can."
Sad thing was, he knew his mom didn't say things like that lightly. Criticism wasn't in her nature, so whenever she did it, he knew to pay attention. "Go live life, Nick. Enjoy your day and stop worrying so much. Check on your mom and go to work."
He felt Ambrose leave him. Nick looked up at the perfectly blue sky above. It was a beautiful day. And I am certifiably insane. I'm seeing demons in my friends, shapeshifters, and hearing voices from lunatic uncles. How had this ant farm become his? Sighing, he turned the corner and crossed the street to Sanctuary. This time, he saw the difference in the bouncers. While this one looked just like Remy, he had his hair down around his shoulders and an easy smile that somehow managed to be both friendly and intimidating all at once. As Amy had told him about earlier, this one had a cool double bow and arrow tattoo on his biceps. "You must be Dev." His grin widened.
"You must be pain in the neck."
"Huh?"
"Don't wet your pants, just a figure of speech. Your mom's been talking about you all day, boy. You are her favorite topic."
"Well, I try hard not to be her favorite hemorrhoid."
Dev laughed. "She said you were sharp and entertaining. I can see she's right. Go on in and make yourself at home."
Their friendliness amazed him, mostly because he had a feeling they weren't like that with everyone. How could they be? They had one heck of a secret they kept from the public. Nick wandered inside. It was a lot busier now. Ren was still bussing tables, but the bartenders had been changed out. They were two more Dev clones, which should make one of them Sharif and the other Quinn. But the coolest thing was that the band was on stage doing a sound check. Mesmerized, Nick wandered over to watch them. So this was the Howlers. He'd never seen a live band perform before. It was actually kind of neat.
"Hey, Colt, your mic's not on," the lead singer said to the guitarist.
"Done on purpose, Angel?"
I don't need to be singing backup anyway. We don't want to clear the house.
The drummer laughed as he adjusted the wingnut on his snare. They were so cool. Aside from the fact that they were all shapeshifters, they were dressed in clothes his mom would throw away, torn jeans and ragged shirts. And when they played, it was magic. Oh yeah, he wanted to be in a band.
Hey, baby.
He turned at the sound of his mom's voice.
Hey, Ma, how's it going?
She was beaming and her face was bright.
It's been a great day. How about you?
Generic. Not entirely true, but she didn't need to know about his weirdness.